If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
That space, social space, just keeps evolving, and the lines keep getting blurred, you know, year after year after year, in terms of what's content, what's paid, what's promotion. Who's an influencer? Is an influencer a brand? Is a brand an influencer?
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are, so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music, and you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. All right, so I'm excited here today with my new friend, Paul Sampson. So Paul is the founder and CEO of Licked, which is a platform that's revolutionizing music licensing for content creators by offering pre-cleared popular tracks for legal use in videos. He's a veteran in music licensing. He has experience at companies like Extreme Music and Music Dealers, and he's an advocate for creator empowerment, which develops solutions that allow creators to enhance their content with mainstream music while also making sure that the artists are actually fairly compensated for it. So excited to have him on the podcast today to talk a little bit about their platform, Licked, and how it's helping to transform music licensing for creators. So Paul, thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
An absolute pleasure. Nice to meet you. Glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So to kick things off, I would love to hear a little bit about your backstory in terms of coming up with Licked, and you know, what was the main the problem that you're setting out to solve with the platform?
Sure. Okay. So I have been in sync licensing. I presume you and your audience will know what sync licensing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, okay, I'm not a sync licensing expert, but fortunately, I get to connect with people who are smarter than I am, like yourself in the sync world. So we're definitely familiar.
Okay, for anyone that doesn't know, essentially it means licensing music into picture. So anytime you watch a film or a TV show or an ad and there's music in it, in your favorite content, someone has negotiated or creatively pitched that song and then negotiated the rights if it wins the creative pitch and made sure that the rights holders and the artists and the writers get paid a fair market rate for that usage and then distributes the money accordingly. I've been doing that for 20 years, since 2005. And I did it in New York, LA, and then London. And I did it in film, in television, in advertising. And then by about halfway through 2015, I remember reading a report on the music industry that mentioned that sync licensing in total contributed 2% to global recorded music revenues. And I thought, wow. God, there's a lot of us scratching around trying to get a share of that 2%. I also realized something else, that the fastest growing production sector in the world was no longer the sectors that I was licensing music into. It wasn't film, it wasn't television, and it wasn't advertising. Mm. It was user-generated content. So Think YouTube at that point, right, 10 years ago. And I thought, well, how would you go about legally compensating an artist if you wanted to use a major song in a YouTube video? And what I learned horrified me. Mm. What I learned was that if you use a famous song in a YouTube video, not only is there anywhere that you can legally acquire all the necessary rights to use that legally, but YouTube will recognize the song, presume that your use of the song is a copyright infringement, because how else did you get the rights to use it? You must be infringing. Mm-hmm. And that copyright claim would divert any revenues you as the video creator would you, because it presumed you had infringed copyright. And what that led to was that the fastest growing production sector in the world, which is UGC, had precluded itself from ever working with mainstream music. And the most valuable, highest grossing audience sector of the fastest growing production sector in the world was actively avoiding using mainstream music in their content because it was appropriating their income. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I thought, well, how do we future-proof this? How do we make sure that, A, there's a solution so that artists and writers and so on can all monetize this opportunity, right? The fastest growing production sector in the world doesn't have a sync solution. That's a problem, right? And so I looked into solving that problem. I also thought, well, hang on a minute. If that scales at the rate that UGC is scaling, then it's quickly going to change that 2% of global revenue to you know, 4, 5, 6, maybe 10, right? And so I looked into it, and I realized that what you needed to build was something like Spotify for content creators, right? That's the shorthand I use. But essentially, you needed a platform. Licensing music at that scale, with the content being that ephemeral and so voluminous, needs automation. It needs pre-clearance of the rights, and it needs a platform where you can audition, license, and do it all within a few minutes, not go through a manual licensing process set up for TV, set up for film, set up for advertising, where they've got 3-month lead times and you can handle the license over the course of 6 weeks. And that is a monumental effort. But that's essentially what we set out to do. The first thing, though, let's imagine that you go, okay, well, I'll build the platform and I'll sign all the rights holders and they'll grant me all the rights, and then I'll match the master recordings to the rights I've got on the publishing, and then whatever is clearable, I'll put on this platform and make it available. If you are lucky enough at that point to get used by your target audience, these content creators, you still leave them facing a problem that YouTube is going to recognize the music and think they've infringed, and it's going to divert their revenue. And what then? They go, no, I did it legally, but who do they tell? How do they get that money back? It's horrific. It's a bad user experience. And so the first thing we did was we sat down, myself and a developer, and we took all the YouTube certifications, the API, the CMS, and what's called Content ID, which is their audio recognition software. And we plotted a path through all of those once we learned them that said, hang on, if we build the software in such a way that these rights holders are willing to integrate it into their YouTube CMS, this software and these processes can inform Content ID of the difference between an infringement and a legally licensed song through Licked. And if we can inform Content ID of when a song is being used legally, we can lift the copyright claim. And if we can lift the copyright claim, people can come to Licked, pay to license a song, and pay a fair fee that scales based on the size of their audience, use that song, and then not be persecuted on YouTube. And somehow the software will inform all the necessary parties that this has been legal action, right? This has been handled legally, that it's been paid for fairly, and that no action should be taken on this video. And we called that software Vouch. And we called it Vouch because it would vouch for our customers. And once we solved that problem, we were so excited. And we, by this point, I'd quit my job. I'd raised some money. We built the software. It worked. Then I went and raised the money. And I started taking meetings with rights holders. And I thought they were going to hold me aloft their shoulders and parade me around the streets like the hero that I was, because I just built the technology that would open up this massive new revenue stream for them. And that was incredibly naive, Michael. I've said this many times, but when it comes to adopting innovation, historically, the music industry has only ever been slightly ahead of the Amish. Mm. And when you look at what they did with all the big tech disruptions, they resisted them. And they resisted us at scale. I remember going into YouTube very early on and meeting with one of the music team there and saying, this is what I plan to do. This is how it's going to work. This is how I'm going to get all of the rights holders on. And he laughed. He literally laughed in my face. And he said, yeah, okay, you're going to get all the distributors in the world to integrate your software. And then they're all going to just deliver you their music. And you're going to do the bountiful work of having to data match all that music. I said, yeah. And he said, good luck. And he ended the meeting. So I was a bit perturbed. I mean, even the guy that gave me my seed funding, the very money that we used to start the business, said to me, Paul, I'll give it to you on one condition. And I said, what's that? And he said, you stop this pipe dream of landing the major labels and publishers because it will never happen. And I said, well, you better put your money back in your pocket then, because I'm not doing it on that basis. I'm doing it because we need to change this from the very, very top. And he finally agreed. Today, there are 14,000 labels and publishers signed to Lix.
Wow.
They have delivered us 14 million songs, 1.5 million of which are cleared and available on the platform for creators around the world to use. Included in that 14,000 are Universal Label and Publishing, Warner Label and Publishing, BMG Label and Publishing, Cobalts of the world, all the big publishers. And, you know, artists like Justin Bieber and Coldplay and Ariana Grande and Blink 182, Post Malone, The Weeknd, you know, they're all being licensed by the biggest content creators in the world. Mm. And when you think about YouTube, I mean, today there are 113 million active YouTube channels. On average, each one of those makes 5 videos a month. And there's 12 months in a year. So you're at like 7-8 billion videos being published every year. And 84% of them, 84% of them use some sort of music. So if you make the best music in the world available to them, just like it is for film producers, just like it is for TV producers, just like it is for ad producers, then you've suddenly got an amazing new audience, a really scalable and motivated new audience that is happy that they've got all the resources available to them that is available to all the other big production sectors. When you think about it, when I had that realization in 2015, by that point, YouTube was 10 years old. And so all the means of production had already democratized to enable UGC, right? You didn't need a cameraman anymore. And you didn't need a cameraman that could hire you a camera. You had your phone or your holiday camera at that point, right? You didn't need an editor who had access to an edit suite, £1,000 a day and a 50 grand Avid setup. You had iMovie for free on your laptop. So all the means of production were available on your dining room table. The only thing that hadn't democratized in line was what I was doing. And that's what we set out to do. That's what the mission for Lix was: democratize music for the world's creators. Essentially, we need to future-proof digital opportunities for the music industry to make sure artists and writers and rights holders can get paid.
Cool.
That was a long intro.
Really awesome. That is so cool. Yeah, thank you for sharing it. I mean, congratulations on. I love a story like that, especially when there's sort of like a face against the odds, you know, and the people literally laughing, you know, at you at the beginning, and then look what you've been able to do. That's really amazing. Yeah. And I think one thing that kind of caught my ear that I thought was really interesting is usually when I hear about like licensing, especially well-known, you know, pieces of work, like I'm thinking of like tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands, or like, you know, like some like very high licensing fees. And I think a lot of, you know, creators don't necessarily have like a budget like that for their user generated content. But what I heard you say is that there's a model that sort of like scales as you grow in terms of your audience size. Love to hear more about that mechanic. And am I understanding it right? That basically makes it like more accessible for someone that's starting out to be able to actually leverage some of those placements.
So to give you an idea, I mean, it's slightly more complicated than that because the model that we offer now is sort of a credits package. So you get unlimited stock music plus one mainstream song, right? For like $15.99. Or you can get two mainstream songs or four mainstream songs with your package, right? But the price for each of those scales based on the size of your channel. If you took just the mainstream music away, so if I go back 3 years when we didn't offer stock music and we just offered mainstream, a mainstream song for an entry-level content creator would cost $7. Sorry, $8, €7, £6, right? So $8. For the biggest content creators in the world, that same song on the same day might cost 1,000 times that.
Mm-hmm.
And anywhere in between along that spectrum. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's so great.
When you create an account with Licked, you OAuth into Licked through your YouTube account or your Google account. It ingests all your channel analytics. It works out what we call your AVV, your average video viewership. And that will fall into a sliding rate card of bandwidths. So 0 to 50,000 views of video would be £6, €7, $8. 50 to 100,000 views per video would be £10, €11, $12, right? And so on and so forth. And actually, each time you log in, it recalculates you. And what we've noticed is our customers grow with us, and so many of them accredit the growth of their channel to the use of mainstream music, because it engages people better. So they get more comments. People watch for longer. Now, let's imagine you're doing a workout video. You're watching a workout video on YouTube, right? It's hard enough to finish a 15-minute workout. It's hard enough to finish a 15-minute workout on YouTube. It's even harder to finish that 15-minute workout on YouTube if it's scored by stock music techno, right? Now, if that 15-minute workout is scored by five of your favorite tracks, you're going to finish it, right? And YouTube looks for metric changes, inflections. So if suddenly people are watching your video for longer or completing your video more often, and more people are commenting and more people are sharing and more people are watching, it will drive you into the algorithm. It will start promoting your content, and that drives more views, which drives more revenue, and you're in a whatever the opposite of a vicious circle is, right? Like a victorious circle. And it becomes self-fulfilling. And what we've noticed is people start with us at $8 and end up at $100. And you get concerned at that point. We're going to churn this customer. They're paying 10, 12 times what they were a year ago. And invariably, they don't. They say, no, we got here because it's increased the production value of our content, because we're making better content. It sounds like we want it to. People are enjoying it and resonating with it because they recognize the music. And it's served valuable for us, right? So, yeah, it's been a win-win for everyone in the value chain, right? Rights holders get more revenue. Artists and writers get paid a bit more than they were doing before. Creators get to use all the music available to all other production sectors. And the audience gets better content.
Cool. Yeah. I like it. I mean, it just feels like the best way to set it up. So that's usage based, and that the value is like, you know, is paid out to people based on how it's being used. And so that's really cool that you could crack the code on how to do that and just make it more accessible so that people have the ability to be able to feature those songs so they can grow at those earlier stages.
Absolutely.
Here's your perspective as someone that, you know, was able to be forward thinking enough to have an idea like this and, you know, have people laugh at you like, oh, like, don't you know how it's done? And then take it through to fruition and change, you know, the industry. Right now, it feels like we're sort of having a bit of a tidal wave moment with generative AI, and it's changing a lot in terms of the scope of all sorts of different creative fields. I mean, just like, a couple of days ago at the time recording this, OpenAI just dropped like Codex, which we've been using for like development, and that's, you know, amazing. And it feels like every day there's something happening. And it seems like in particular with licensing and like music sync, there's a large use case for when you're not trying to like use a recognized song to generate it with like AI. But
yeah,
probably your platform is maybe even more well suited in that world, because the people, like, you're probably trying to get it because they care about the recognition from, like, the mainstream artists, and that's like the resonance that they're looking for with those songs. I'd love to hear your perspective on just, like, where things are at, where they're headed, and how do you view this next wave?
It's really interesting, right? And I think you somewhat answered the question in the question. Right?
Yeah, I talked too much there. I should pull back a little bit.
No, but I'm not saying that. I just mean, like, you touched on something that's really interesting. You said when people are looking not to use mainstream music, right?
Mm, yeah.
Well, when are they not looking to use mainstream music? And there are times they're not looking to use mainstream music. That's why we offer stock music as part of the bundle. Stock music does one thing very, very well and one thing very, very badly. The thing it does very well is provide you a toolkit of sounds not provided by mainstream music. So if I need a piece of my video to sound like Pirates of the Caribbean, or to sound like a murder mystery, or to sound like Psycho, I need a toolkit. I'm not going to get that from Ed Sheeran and Jess Glynn, right? So I go in and I type in horror or dramedy or comedy or fantasy or adventure or drones, right? That's your toolkit. That piece, that world, the production costs on creating stock music catalogs are going to be driven incredibly far down, right? Because people will be able to, in no short time, no short order, they'll be able to generate that sound and not necessarily have to pay a monthly subscription for access to a catalog that exists. Similarly, the companies that own that space, that are in the incumbents in that space, won't have to lay out $3,000 for every new version of that sound to keep their catalog fresh to a composer sat in a bedroom somewhere, right? What they should be doing is pivoting their models to incorporate Gen AI and use that Gen AI to augment the tracks they have already paid and owned, right? In terms of people using it instead of mainstream music and the threat that that holds, there's two things I'd say to that. If we don't democratize the access to mainstream music and make it affordable and understand that this is a volume game based around low fees, high volume, right, then we will lose out. We will. If we stand by what the music industry has traditionally monetized scarcity, and everything we ask them to do is democratize and liberate assets, and that scares the industry, right? But if they hold fast with monetizing scarcity, then they will lose out on large revenue opportunities to Gen AI. But one thing Gen AI music will never be able to do is evoke nostalgia. It can't resonate with you on the memories of your lifetime. Now, you might say, well, that's true now, but in 20 years when there are hits made by Gen AI in 2025, I might feel nostalgic about them in 2045. Well, I have played around with the big Gen AI apps, right? And I just don't know the commercial model. I don't understand it. Have you used them?
Yeah, I have, and I'm with you. I feel like they're not there yet in terms of, like, they just don't feel like they're on par with the mainstream, like the top artists in the world. I will say, like, I don't know, they're pretty mind blowing, just like how quickly they've developed. And I don't know if we have this conversation a year from now, we'll see how, like, the quality of it. But if that's what you're asking about is, like, do I feel like it's the quality wise that it is on par with, like, the top music right now? I don't think so. But well, I guess it's kind of blends together because they're using those tools now.
I think there's a really good use case for Gen AI, and it's in music production. If it helps you produce music quicker and better and with fewer people, right? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. We should be welcoming that. But if you're going to create and release music and then tell me I've got to get emotionally connected to it, I'm going to struggle, right? Mm. I'll give you a perfect example. I signed up to the two big ones, right? There's probably is more now, I know. But I signed up to the big ones.
Suno and Udio?
Yeah, I put in a couple of prompts. I augmented them. I iterated them. And then I played them to people. And they were like, God, it's amazing what Gen AI can do. But no one stood around dancing, right? No one said, you've got to send that to me. And after about a day, I haven't touched them since. So as a B2C product, I don't know what the model is, right? Now, I don't know about you, but when I fall in love with a song, the first thing I want to know is who produced it, who wrote it, who's this artist I haven't heard of? What was it that happened in their life that made them come up with that lyric, right? What addiction did they have? What heartbreak did they go through? Where were they born? Where were they raised? Where's this place they're telling me about, right? You'll never get that from AI. Never. It will always be a robot did it, right? And so it's going to always lack that emotional connection with its audience at scale. Will it be able to fill some dance floors? Yes. Will it really grab the hearts of consumers globally? I think there will be some inevitably that do, but will it do it at scale? I don't know. I think most people love first the music and then fall in love with music when they understand the artist and the motivations. And that human being's ability to resonate with you and connect with you and describe something that you went through as if they're describing your life, and that's why you feel connected to them. And the moment I hear a robot did it, I'll be like, oh, well, this is just synthetic. So I think there'll be a place for it, but I don't think it will ever, A, be able to create nostalgia, or B, be able to connect emotionally in the way that we think about music and fall in love with music and artists and festivals and live performances, right? Does that
totally make sense. Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that these are incredible tools when they're used as tools, and that when they're separated from the human or from the artist itself, that it sort of loses that emotional connection, or it kind of gives it more depth versus when it is just like a robot did it on its own. There's not a whole lot to sink your teeth into there. It's like, okay, cool. Like robot did it. Sort of like watching two robots play a game of chess against each other. It's like, okay, like that's impressive that they can play chess against each other, but also like it's just not entertaining. Exactly. Or it's not really fun to watch.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So look, there's a place for it. I think ultimately the bigger consumer play will be that there'll be more hobbyist music producers, right? Perhaps, and the AI will help them not need a studio. Right. In the same way that I've helped YouTubers or content creators not need a business affairs team, right? Because they were never going to have one, and not need to go through a 6 to 8 week clearance process because we've streamlined things. This can help people that love music but don't necessarily have musical ability or access to a studio or funds suddenly start to be able to create some music, and there'll be a home for that music somewhere. But it will come from a human. The input will be the human. I think that's where the market is. I just don't know that we're all going to end up paying £15 a month to have the ability to create music on the fly. Like someone sent me one, and I was like, "It's quite good. That's quite catchy." When did you make it? And they said, "Oh, I just took about 8 seconds. I did it on did it on one of those apps." Immediately, I lost all feeling for the song. Right? I was like, "Oh, well, I could have done it." Right. And I feel like if I could have done it, there's not much value in it.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I don't know. I mean, like it feels like regardless of what I say or what either of us says, like, I don't know, 5, 10 years, 20 years from now, like, there's gonna be some way that I'd look like a fool or that is like it's just if you had like but I do feel like I probably align most closely with Ray Kurzweil from his line of thinking from the book, The Singularity is Near, Singularity is Nearer, in that we appear to be on like a exponential growth curve when it comes to information technology, and music is, an important part of that. And I don't know, like I really do think that like artificial intelligence is sort of misunderstood in that, like the terminology we have for it is like artificial intelligence and feels like fake or not real. And when I think of like Microsoft Sam, when it first came out, like I am like a robot, it talks like this versus like, Grok or ChatGPT now. And it's like starting to articulate and it's still not quite there, right? Still not quite there, but I feel like we're on the verge of a super intelligence that you sort of changes like what it means to like the way that our economics work. Like we're just gonna have this age of abundance and the ability to create. I think I'm aligned with your line of thinking in that, like, I think that this type of intelligence is something that I hope that like humanity comes along for the ride, where we find a way to like synergize with it. But I'm probably like a weirdo that really believes in that, like we're building a form of intelligence that is going to either humanity is going to come along for the ride and like get Neuralinks installed and, you know, and be able to use these tools, or we'll have a relationship to it similar to like an ant has a relationship to us as humans. We're just kind of like hard to even fathom or understand. Like if an ant was like to try to imagine what it's like to be a human, it's just like, yeah, it just doesn't compute. That was probably way down a rabbit hole. That was like a bit off track versus what we were talking about. But
listen, I think you're right. I think that being asked to answer questions like these, as you put it to me, will make one or all of us look stupid in the longer term, right? In terms of my industry, I don't see it affecting sync licensing in the next 20 years dramatically, other than I think it will change the means of production for stock music or people that can't get access to mainstream music. I think that, you know, it will democratize that space completely.
What I like about your company, and what I feel like it's well suited to thrive in this like new world of generative AI, is because of the model that you've created with making it accessible, making it accessible to like use these tools and for it to scale with you. Because there's always going to be a need for like, we're going to want to soundtrack our music with the music that we enjoy listening to and that people, enjoy listening to, that resonates with them. I think the only question I would have is around like, maybe this is something that you're already thinking about or working on, but like just the trend towards personalization. And I think this is probably a wider thing too. Like, probably at some point in the future, it'll be like you're watching a YouTube video and then it knows who you are. So it's like, I'm going to soundtrack it based on your personal preferences and like what you like. And so it just like dynamically generates the soundtrack.
Yeah. I think it would need two more. I think it would need another input, right? Which is, what does the video need?
Absolutely. It'd be a pretty complex equation.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's that complex really, but like you say, look, what does the video need? And of those, what are my favorites, right? Mm. So what you like and what the video needs are two separate things. The video might need drones and space and a climax, right? And a slow build. And your favorite song might be 180 BPM consistently for 5 minutes. But of my slow build songs, which I like, that I've liked on Spotify, right, which ones will fit this piece of the video first so that I'm most content to see the finished product. So I think it's selection and supervision, absolutely, that there's a place for it. I mean, there are other places for us to work on in licensing before AI comes to the fore. I mean, by the time this comes out, we'll have launched a new product. So if you think about Licht as I described it, it's essentially the first consumer-facing mainstream music licensing platform in the world, right? Mm. What we're launching is a B2B version of that. But I don't know if you've seen all the lawsuits in the space at the moment around copyright infringements by brands on TikTok and Instagram.
Mm. I know it's a bit of the Wild West right now.
It is. And there's confusion in the space, because the space, social space, just keeps evolving and the lines keep getting blurred, you know, year after year after year, in terms of what's content, what's paid, what's promotion. Who's an influencer? Is an influencer a brand? Is a brand an influencer? Right. And so, you know, you and I, Michael, can use whatever song we want on our Instagram and our TikTok, anything.
Wow.
If we get paid by a brand, we no longer have access to that music.
Mm.
It suddenly requires a license. And because of the world of brand presence on socials, and then the graying of that space with branded content influencer marketing. So the brand saying, hey, it's not just going out on my channel, but it's going out on everyday people's channels. Mm-hmm. So they can use what they like. Well, no, you're paying them. This is branded content. This is a commercial endeavor. It requires permission. It requires a license, right? But I have some empathy with the brands, not a whole lot, but some. Because if you try and get a license to use a song, you'll go to a label. If you're lucky, they'll get back to you. And if you're lucky and they get back to you, they will end the quote process by saying to you, by the way, you also need to clear the publishing. And we have no idea who owns that publishing. So good luck. Go and contact the seven multinational companies that you don't know who they are yet. And if they all respond to you in time, come back and pay me an equal share of what they quoted, right? And that's the 6 to 8 week process that we spoke about. And people are putting out content 3 to 4 times a day, a day, right? So even for organic branded content, there has to be a much quicker, much more streamlined licensing solution. And so we're calling it Licked for Brands, right? The same way that you got Spotify and Spotify for Business. There'll be Licked and Licked for Brands. And Licked for Brands offers brands a platform that houses major label music, because major label music is not available to brands on those platforms, right? On Instagram and TikTok and so on, YouTube Shorts. And it enables them to ask permission to the use of the song and notify every owner of every percent of that song simultaneously. So wow. The moment you found the song and clicked submit on your request, every rights holder in the world that has any percentage of that song is notified in real time. All of them have the information of your brand and what you're looking to use it for, and can click a yes or a no in a portal on the back end of that platform once they've discussed with management or the artist. That means we can take a 6 to 8 week clearance process for brands that has led to them actively either avoiding mainstream music or just willfully infringing because they're fed up with it. And going, well, you haven't provided us a route to legally access this music, so this is our protest dance, right? And say, actually, here's a way to get these turned around in 24, 48 hours. And Licked for Brands, at the moment, we have the top 6 publishers in the world signed, and Universal on the label side and BMG on the label side. By the time this goes out, Warner Music as well. Wow. And even in private beta, we've seen L'Oreal, Therabody, Ray-Ban Meta, a couple of eyewear brands already use the platform to great success and license, you know, mainstream major label music quickly, simply, cost-effectively, and legally, importantly. And that has lots of legs because artists are getting infringed, and the filing lawsuits left, right, and center, waiting for the infringement to scale, and then slamming down the gavel, right, is not a long-term monetization strategy. And ultimately, without providing one that's scaled and streamlined, it's the artists and the music creators that will lose out. And so I'm really excited about that product, because it suddenly uses all the scalable technology that we've got used to building, all of the rights holder partners that we've built our relationships with, all of the data on ownership that we've collated over the years, and all of that to fruition. Brings it all together for the further benefit of artists and musicians and music creators by providing access to another revenue stream. And it's really important that people get on board with that, because those platforms aren't going anywhere. They're only going to eat more promotional space, more advertising space, and need more music. And if we can't get it there, then again, AI will get there first. The stock music solutions will get there first, right? If you look at someone like Epidemic Sounds, who have built an incredible business, and I'm so impressed with them. I know the people that created that business. But if you want to know how a stock music company with just 30,000, 35,000 stock music tracks gets a $1.4 billion, with a B, billion dollar valuation on 35,000 tracks you've never heard, that's how the music industry sits on its hands. The music industry fails to innovate. The music industry fails to accept the technical solutions being brought to them and the opportunities to bring brought to them. Because the music industry is what? 50,000 fragmented individual rights owners. They can never act as one. All innovation comes from third parties, and they need to work hand in hand with those innovative third parties to say, help us solve the problems of the future, and we will democratize our assets to you. Otherwise, they're in trouble.
Mm. Wow. Super, super cool. Well, Paul, thank you for everything that you've built, especially considering the kind of foresight that it must have had, especially early on before you kind of have those major players on board. It kind of takes a significant amount of drive and that what Steve Jobs talks about, the square pegs and the round holes.
Yeah.
So thank you for on behalf of the full music industry for being a square peg that ultimately it sounds like one of your main purposes here is just to make it easier to do the right thing. Because if it's hard for people to license these mainstream artists, then they're going to turn to routes that are easier, that aren't necessarily as regulated or that fairly pay out and compensate everyone. So super, super exciting. And for anyone that is listening or watching this right now that wants to explore the platform more, what's the best place for them to go to get started?
So the core platform is licked.co, LICKD.co. And then the new one is brands.licked.co. Same spelling. Look, it's important, right? As I said before, the mission is democratize music for the world's creators. When I wrote that, in 2016, I meant YouTube content creators. But I always wrote creators with a small c. Today, brands are creators, and they offer artists and music creators an enormous untapped revenue stream. In not too distant future, people building in the metaverse will be creators, and they will offer an enormously scalable untapped revenue stream. The digital landscape will always evolve, and every time there's a new fissure in it, stock music gets there on day one and capitalizes. AI could get there on day one as well. The mainstream music sector needs to make sure that it can get there at least on the afternoon of day two and not, January of year three, which is how it currently acts, right? And that's where we see our role. But there are very good people at the majors that want to innovate. Right, it's just there's lots of layers of bureaucracy. So, if you're listening to this and you want to innovate and you like our mission, then come on board.
Awesome. Well, like always, we'll put the links in the show notes for easy access. And Paul, really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast today and share a little bit about your mission and what you're doing to help revolutionize the music industry.
You're very welcome, Michael. It was a pleasure speaking to you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for this free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.